Leslie, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we could speak German, of course, but as
Yeah.
everybody knows she speaks perfect German. But
Das stimmt nicht.
well, see what
Ich
I
kann nur ein bisschen, das stimmt.
mean? That's good enough. You can read German
Yeah.
decisions too.
Yeah.
Okay,
Very
so
slowly.
yeah. Now, you're not an attorney, but you know a lot about the law. What is your background?
Well, so I'm the president of Health Freedom Defense Fund, and Health Freedom Defense Fund is a nonprofit that I founded last year. But I'd really like to go back and explain a little bit more of my background, if it's okay.
Sure.
I started out actually as an MBA. I got my MBA from the University of Chicago, and I worked in finance for many years, living in London. And I first started out working for Goldman Sachs, and then I ended up going and working for one of my clients, which is Alliance Capital, and running their European growth portfolio management and research businesses for a period of years until I retired. And I retired because I was sick and getting sicker. And I didn't know at the time, but it was because of vaccine injury, actually. And but I was also really disillusioned with what I was doing because I love to tell the story because it's just such a jaw-dropping story. But my job at Alliance was to interview the CEOs of multinational corporations and decide which of the European companies we should put into our portfolios. And I used to see the the CEOs of these companies all the time because we were some of the biggest shareholders in the world. And so one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in the world at the time came into our offices, and they had a drug that was in phase three trials. And their drug was in the phase three trials, it was killing some people. And so the whole management team came in and they said, listen, yes, in very, very rare instances, people have died in the clinical trial, but we think it's very, very rare. It's not a big issue. And then he said, the bad news is the FDA is going to make us put a black box warning on the packaging. The good news is we still think we'll be able to do $7 billion in peak sales. And I thought to myself, wow, okay, so they know people are going to die from this drug, but they're okay with it because they're still going to do $7 billion in peak sales. And for me, it was just a complete wake-up call. It completely changed my life, because I just felt, for some, the veil was lifted, right? And I could see that these pharmaceutical companies were more concerned about their corporate profits than they were about human life, and it really shifted something in me. And so I ended up quitting, and simultaneously I was sick, and so I had gone to see a homeopath, and homeopathy really started healing me and changing my life. Then I enrolled in homeopathy college, and I learned about the whole vaccine issue, but I had no idea that that's what had happened to me. And I ended up making a documentary film called The Greater Good, which you can see at greatergoodmovie.org. And that really launched me into the whole health freedom space. And so fast forward, I've been researching vaccines and FDA and laws and all these things for a very, very long time, almost 20 years now. And you get us to January of 2020, and I could see as soon as this whole thing was announced how it was going to unfold. And that was the impetus for me to actually found Health Freedom Defense Fund, was that I was, gravely concerned about where this was all going. And you could tell because, I can walk you through the legislation that's been passed in the United States, starting back with the Bayh-Dole Act in 1980, I believe it was. This is an act that allows the federal employees who do research funded by federal tax dollars to actually retain the intellectual property rights, so patents on those things, and then profit. And so Fauci and all of his minions, they are profiting off of this, and people don't understand this. But anyway, so the coming full circle, I started out as an MBA, saw a lot of the corruption in the corporate world firsthand myself, and then as this all started to unfold last year, I could see where it was all going and decided to start Health Freedom Defense Fund. And a wonderful, amazingly accomplished lawyer came into my life shortly before that. And so he is my general counsel, which I can talk about. But that's basically the answer for that, Reiner.
Well, that case then, the case with the client from the pharmaceutical industry, it sounds like the Ford Pinto case. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't care as long as they make money. They don't even care if people die.
No, it's jaw-dropping. People just don't understand it. Yeah, and I mean, I think I have a very unique perspective for perhaps from having been at a fairly, successful level in that world. And people just don't understand. And the thing is, everyone thinks, oh, well, we've got, everything's okay because we have, so the way it works in finance is that the big institutional investment managers, pension funds and things like that, they are supposed to act as a check and balance on the corporate world, right? So if they think that management is doing something that's inappropriate or wrong, then the big institutional investment managers should say something. That's the whole point of shareholders, right? The problem is that the line of thinking has become, if you're invested in the stock, then you should support management. So that check and balance has been completely destroyed by this idea that, well, you shouldn't own the company, own stock in the company if you don't like what management is doing. The whole point is to have shareholders who are active and who are saying, hey, you shouldn't pay your CEO that much, or this isn't appropriate, you know, to hold them accountable. And that's not happening.
I thought that was changing. I thought that shareholders were beginning to be much more active, but maybe that's not the case anymore.
Well, Reiner, I think what it is that I haven't been in that world for almost 20 years now. And so, I mean, I think I finished in 2003 was when I fully ended my career. And yes, some shareholders are becoming more active, and there are some organizations that are more activist type, but it's usually around a specific issue like climate change or something like that. You know, it's almost always agenda or issue driven rather than just pure corporate governance. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's getting better, but you know, we're talking about the trillions of dollars that are held by these asset managers, and they're not really providing the proper check that you would have thought that they were providing. You know, it's a very interesting thing.
I've been to a number of annual meetings of some of the German corporations, and it turns out that those who are really in power are, of course, the large institutional investors, and they're always in line with management. So I guess maybe nothing has changed. It looked like it was changing, but then again, no. And they're only...
And the thing is, there's a reason for it. So, you know, our kind of corporate policy was that don't own the stock if you don't like what management's doing, which is, you know, kind of understandable. But there's the other thing is that if you're agitating and you're different, if you're really challenging what the CEO and CFO, the, you know, corporate management are doing, they don't actually want to talk with you. And so if you want access to management, you have to play nice. And right. And in order to get access to and you want access to management in order to really understand the business so you can make the most accurate investment decisions. So it's very, it's a conflicted and challenging situation like so many in life. Right. Mm-hmm. That the investment, the research analysts and the portfolio managers play nice with management, even if they don't like something that they're doing. Because they need access to them. And the thing is, the investor relations person is the gatekeeper. And if you're a pain in the butt, you're not going to get meetings with these people. Mm-hmm. If you don't get meetings with those people, then you can't do your job as well.
Mm-hmm. So, and now we see a lot of, like, you know, this with the revolving door with the authorities that are supposed to watch over the safety issues, say for the vaccines and other, you know, medical devices and stuff, and they're also not doing a good job because, like, it's in, you know, like this like an intertwinement basically of conflicting interests, as what we can see everywhere now. I mean, looking at the Drosten situation where he comes out with a research paper, and then at the same time he's that's being then cited by the WHO, and then it's, you know, it's like, and he's involved in this company, Tipmol Biol, you know, that produces the PCR test. Is like a, it's a huge I don't know, like a huge amount of conflicting interests, and we sometimes don't even know about this, but when we do, it's not looking very good.
Yeah, so Viviane, it is, people have no idea how controlled everything that they see is. And when I say everything they see, I mean not just the newspaper, not just television news, but in the medical journals, what the hospital research centers, what all of the research centers and government agencies and entities are putting out. And then the reason for that is twofold. One is that the vast majority of research, I mean, almost all research is done either by the pharmaceutical industry or taxpayer, you know, government grants that are taxpayer funded. And government has policies, right? They promote vaccines. They promote all sorts of things. They promote the pharmaceutical industry in many, many ways. And the pharmaceutical industry is the number one advertiser in all media outlets, 70% of television news in the United States in a non-election year. They
70? Holy smokes.
Yeah. Not to mention, they spend something like, I have to think if I remember this figure correctly, but something like $4 billion every year in the United States in all sorts of promotion, advertising, marketing, you know, all different kinds of things that they do. But they also are the biggest purchaser of what is called medical journal reprints. So when medical journals are put out, you know, doctors subscribe and libraries and other institutions subscribe. And that's one portion of the revenue stream for these journals. But a gigantic portion, if I remember correctly, 40% in some cases, maybe 50%, is actually what's called journal reprints. And so what happens is the pharmaceutical industry funds the research. They oftentimes have ghostwritten research, so they just pay someone to write it. And this has been revealed in lawsuits against Eli Lilly and other corporations over time. And then they'll just put some doctor's name on it who wants to show like they've been published. And then they get it published in a peer-reviewed journal. And then they pay for reprints of that peer-reviewed journal. So they get an article really glossy and nicely printed of their research that's been published in the journal. And then they send it out all over the world. So if you're a medical journal and that's 40% of your revenues, are you going to be very discerning about what you publish? Mm. Are you going to publish things that are very sympathetic to the pharmaceutical industry? And that's what happens. And then there's another piece of it, which is really important. I mentioned the Bayh-Dole Act. Well, in 1992, the Prescription Drug User Fee Act was passed in the United States by the Congress. And it was updated in, I think, 2007 and then more recently. And what this did was actually facilitate industry capturing FDA. Okay, so it used to be that FDA was funded by just by taxpayer dollars, right? It was a government entity. Now, FDA drug approvers, drug reviewers, 50 to 60% of their salaries are paid directly by the pharmaceutical industry itself. More than that, even in some years. Yes. So the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, as I mentioned, it was passed in 92, and they were like, oh, it's just going to be small. You know, it's $100 million or something like that. Now, I looked at something, and I think the budget is now that it's over $1 billion. I think it was $1.3 billion, if the thing that I was looking at is correct. That's what the forecast, or that's what it was in 2017. Fees as a total percentage of the program, 63%. So you have a situation where the FDA drug reviewers are beholden to the pharmaceutical industry itself rather than to the people that they are supposed to be protecting, the public. So we have, it is just so corrupt. And then there's a third wheel of this, which is that it's not just the pharmaceutical industry, but in the first decade of this century, the Gates Foundation gave $1 billion, a billion with a B, to the media in the United States.
That's the point.
Okay, $1 billion. And what did they do it for? They gave them, of course, right? They gave them $1 billion in order to make sure that they were trained and educated to portray the Gates Foundation's perspective accurately.
Accurately, yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever that means.
Exactly.
So this is a... The thing is, it's more than a spider web. It's a swamp of corruption.
Door, and it is a, yeah. it's massive collusion.
And it's
massive.
Everywhere. It's everywhere. It includes all areas of society. It includes politics. It includes industry. It probably includes some of the courts as well. We know that it does here in Europe. We know that it does in Germany.
Yes.
And there are few people out there who are capable of understanding what's going on. It even amongst the legal community here, I mean the judiciary, there are about 60 or maybe 70 judges and prosecutors, or is it more, who don't want to play along with this?
No, we don't know the numbers.
Maybe a little less, but it's a group of people which pales in comparison to the huge number of judges. I think there's 60,000 or so in this country. So we're dealing with the same problems all over the world, and I think we do need to. If you look everywhere you look, you see corruption. There's a group which I used to belong to. I think I just canceled my membership. It's Transparency International, which. They have great people working for this group. It's an anti-corruption NGO. But at the very top, that's where the corruption is. So we do have to have a great reset, but quite different from what the other side wants it to be. Quite different.
Yes, we do need a... I mean, I think that that's something that we can all agree on, is that we do need a reset, right? Yeah. We need to clean house.
Yes, we need to clean house.
Our governments tax us with no intention, tax us and spend with no intention of ever repaying.
Yeah.
U.S. debt is now something like $28 trillion.
Oh my
God. This is insane. It was only $4 trillion literally like 15 years ago. I mean, this is unreal, right?
Yeah.
It is insane what we're experiencing. And it's because it's not just, so, you know, I've talked about one piece of it, but there's the other part of it, which is that you don't get anywhere unless you are willing to play ball with these groups,
yeah,
right?
That's
and
the point.
And there's something really important too, that there's an amazing book called None Dare Call It Conspiracy that came out in the 1970s. And it was a follow-up to something called the Church Committee. And there were investigations by Congress into the focus of nonprofit foundations in the United States. Okay. So nonprofits didn't exist at the turn of the 20th century. They were created in the early part of the, I forget, it was like 1908, 1910, 19, somewhere in that arrangement, in that area. And they appear to be for philanthropic purposes, but really is what's happened is that they are a secret way for the super rich to amass wealth, manage their wealth, and deploy it secretly, tax-free. So what happens is that those foundations, and this was what the investigations revealed, was that these foundations are using their influence and their tax-free money,
yeah,
to fund the universities, to fund the research hospitals, to fund academia, to fund all sorts of grassroots NGOs, nonprofits, and things like that, and to subvert our educational system, to do a huge spectrum of things, which are all destroying the fabric of our societies. This was revealed, and then it was, of course, very, very quickly covered up. But you can read that book, and you can really understand what's going on. And there was also something called the Reese Committee, which actually it was the Reese Committee that investigated this. The Church Committee investigated the CIA putting operatives into the media, into the New York Times and the Washington Post and all these other major media outlets.
They're probably still there.
Of course they are. I mean, oh, no, they ended the program, Reiner. They did. They suspended it, of course. Uh-huh.
Yeah, right.
Publicly, right.
Oh, God.
But, you know, there's something, if I can share really quickly, because it's really important to understand that there's all of that. And then for the last 20 years, they've been really laying the groundwork for this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was, in the United States in particular, they introduced, after 9/11, they introduced the Patriot Act, which allowed warrantless search and seizure and mass surveillance of Americans. And then, and that was literally introduced and passed 45 days after 9/11. That's just impossible.
Yeah.
Right? And then within a couple of weeks, the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act legislation was introduced, and it's been ratified in part or in whole or in part by, I think, 43 states the last time I looked. And what that did was confer extraordinary police powers to health departments and governors in the event of a disease outbreak.
And of course, once they have that power, they will never give it up again.
Exactly. And then in 2005, the PREP Act, which conferred more power on the Secretary of Health and Human Services and provided immunity from any kind of prosecution, so legal and financial liability for vaccines or any kind of medical product used during an emergency. And then you fast forward to 2012, 13, and 16, and they legalized propagandizing American citizens, set up the program to do it, and funded it. So anything that you read or watch or see anywhere in the media could possibly be pure lies and subversion by our own intelligence agencies in order to manipulate and control the populace.
You know, the good thing is that it's all coming out into the open now.
All of it. Yeah.
Slowly but surely, but it's picking up speed, actually, because the other side in some ways seems to be panicking. You mentioned when we talked last time that there is some evidence that this, not ours, not the one that I was just talking about, but their great reset has failed in the, or is failing in the United States. Because some of the states just don't play along anymore.
Yeah, they do. First of all, it's actually quite hilarious. I actually read yesterday that, and when I say it's hilarious, please do not misconstrue my meaning that people who have been injured or, you know, God forbid, died from this, that there is, you know, that I don't have any heart or don't care about them. I care about anybody who dies and anybody who's injured by a medical product and anyone who's injured or sickened, right? I mean, nobody wants that to happen. And nobody wants people to be injured or to die from any reason, right? I want to just be really clear on that because I think it's so easy for these people to try and misconstrue those of us who are concerned about our liberty.
Yeah, we know that.
Mm-hmm. So what I find hilarious is that they are constantly pushing, you know, ringing the alarm bells about how frightened we should all be and pushing the vaccines, which have not been tested, which they've suspended the clinical trials by unblinding the control groups and offering the control groups the vaccine 2 months after they were issued emergency use authorization. And what's happened is, you know, they keep telling us, right? Fauci and Gates and all these people keep telling us that there will be no going back to normal until everyone's vaccinated. And yet those who are vaccinated, like Fauci, are still wearing masks. But what happened, what I read yesterday, is that they have administered about 204 million doses of the vaccines since they were issued. And 84 or 85 million people have received two doses. So they're, quote unquote, fully vaccinated. But all of these major vaccination centers are struggling because demand is petering out. And they don't know what to do. They're having to figure out how to drum up more demand for them. And so think about that. If only 84 million people in America have been fully vaccinated, that's about a quarter of our population. Mm-hmm. That really suggests to me that they are not in control of the narrative.
Yes.
That the other side is really struggling because that these super center vaccination centers are having to figure out what to do because they've got too much vaccine and no demand for it. Yeah. They are struggling. And then you've got this just massive liberty movement and in states, you know, across the nation and governors who are now really starting to buck the narrative. And so I do really think that I think that one of the reasons why it's appeared to be the hardest, one of the hardest hit countries is the United States, is because this is a global takedown of democracy.
Yeah.
It's a global coup. It's an effort to destroy Western civilization. I'm sorry, I really believe this. And it's not because it's a conspiracy theory. It's because Klaus Schwab has written a book about it. Yeah. And this is what the World Economic Forum puts forth all the time. You know, his book is COVID-19, The Great Reset. Anyway, the point is that I think that one of the reasons that there's been so much focus on the United States is precisely because the United States has this, was founded on the ideology and the principles of liberty, individual accountability.
Yeah, they have to quash that.
They have to destroy that if they want to succeed. I think that, you know, the kind of socialist mentality is much stronger in Europe than it is in the US. And
what's happened
is they've kind of poked us in the eye, and now people are really, really ready for the fight.
Yeah.
And so what they've done is, you know, what's that? They've woken a sleeping bear, I think, is what's happened.
Which is good.
One thing, I have one question. Do you think that's a realistic number, these 85 million Americans vaccinated, or could this also be like an exaggeration and it's maybe only like 40 million or something like that, so that they're even like making up that figure?
Who knows?
It's very hard to say. That was reported in the mainstream media, so it could be a complete lie. I find it surprising. I think, though, that they would, it's an embarrassing number.
Yes, it is.
So that's, I would be surprised if, you know, it could, maybe it is 40 million and they're exaggerating because that would be, you know, embarrassing, but clearly it's not what they were expecting.
No, absolutely not. This is not part of their plan.
Yeah. So Reiner, can I just say, you know, that everything that I've been talking about is the reason that I founded Health Freedom Defense Fund. And Health Freedom Defense Fund is focused on, we're first of all collaborating with Reiner and you guys, your whole team. And secondly, we are focused on pushing back against this agenda through litigation and education. So we are helping employees of the Los Angeles Unified School District to sue their school district for forcing the vaccine on them. And we have a mask mandate lawsuit that will be filed very soon. We have some very big picture, you know, high level challenges that are in the works that will really go for the head of the serpent on this whole issue. I don't want to go into detail about them, but I will just say that around the about a year and a half ago, a little over a year and a half ago, an amazing lawyer whom you know, Reiner, was brought into my life, and I started educating him about the corruption and collusion with, you know, between the federal health agencies and the pharmaceutical industry and the whole vaccine issue, and that vaccine makers can't be sued and all this. And he was so, so shocked by it all. He became really inspired to do something about it. And so he is my general counsel. His name is George Wentz, and he's a partner at Davalier Law Group. And he couldn't be with us this morning, but he is a strategic and legal genius. And he's my general counsel. And so we are doing everything we can and collaborating with several different groups to help push back against what we face as a nation and in a world.
And that is,
you know, I think it's very interesting now that we, you know, looking at what we've already heard from all the lawyers involved here now and from you, I think it's really becomes clear that it must be some sort of agenda, because it's so strange that it's happening in every country in exactly the same way. Because if it was not like a coordinated thing, or like at least to some extent, you know, orchestrated, then why would the judges in Germany, you know, or like this whole legal, the change of the legislation and all that, why would this happen basically at the same time with almost the same agenda, or like making it harder and harder for us to push, you know, legally against what's happening? So I think it's cannot be that this is just mere coincidence, that it's all over the
world. Of course this is an agenda. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and, you know, to that point specifically, Europe had the plans for a vaccine passport a year and a half before this pandemic happened.
Uh-huh.
So how is that possible that they had the plans for that?
Yeah.
I mean, if that wasn't the case, and in the United States, they've been trying for decades, two decades at least, to push for mandatory vaccination of the populace. They've been trying everywhere, and they're changing. They literally ram things through. I mean, it's all coordinated.
Okay. We now have to go and talk to our Austrian colleagues who are waiting, but I'm really glad you're on board, Leslie. This is good. That's very encouraging.
Can I just give my website too? It's healthfreedomdefense.org. So if anybody wants to learn more about what we're doing or support our work, please go to healthfreedomdefense.org. And thank you so much for having me on, you guys.
Thank you for being with us. We'll put it up on our website too.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for all you're doing to try and help everybody and what you're doing for humanity.